Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Monday, June 15th. It is my mother's birthday, and I am opening a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. And we're going to start, since we have Representative Gallegos here with us, by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3525. Representative? And any others who want to? Do we have any other people testifying on that one, Julie? Ms. Moreno, thank you. Great. Come on up, gentlemen. Yeah, while you're settling in, John can give us a briefing here.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee, House Bill 3525 establishes the Task Force on Immigration Consultant Fraud. It directs the task force to report to the committee or interim committee of legislative assembly no later than September 15, 2015, and sunsets December 31, 2016. The bill requires the Oregon Advocacy Commission to provide staff support for the task force. The fiscal impact of this bill on the Advocacy Commission is indeterminate, depending on the scope of work undertaken by the task force, as well as the number of meetings and the location of those meetings. You should find all the materials, fiscal impact, staff measure summary on OLIS.
Thank you, Representative. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Happy birthday to your mom.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Smith and Co-Chair Steiner Hayward. And members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joseph Gallegos, and I am the state representative from House District 30, which is Hillsborough, North Plains, a couple of houses in Beaverton. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon in support of House Bill 3525, which addresses the problem of dishonest immigration consultants, often known as notarios. The term notario público is particularly problematic in that it creates a unique opportunity for deception. The literal translation of the term is notary public. The problem arises when individuals obtain notary public licenses in the United States and use these licenses to substantiate representations that they are notario públicos to immigrant populations that ascribe a very different meaning to the term. While a notary public in the United States is authorized only to witness the signature of forms, a notary public in many Latin American countries and even some European countries refers to an individual who has received the equivalent of a law license and who is authorized to represent others before the government. Misrepresentations as to the individual's qualifications to offer legal advice can have severe implications for immigrants. In many cases, the work performed by such individuals results in missed deadlines, the filing of incorrect or incomplete forms, and the filing of false claims with the government. As a result, the advice and actions of individuals, an immigrant can miss opportunities to obtain legal residency, can be unnecessarily deported, or can be subject to civil and or criminal liability for filing false claims. In addition, immigrants often spend hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in payments for what they believe are the services of a licensed attorney. By promising too much and knowing too little, notarios often destroy the dreams of immigrants. They promise low-cut, quick results for everything from citizenship to green card renewals, but often do not know the immigration laws. These notarios often take advantage of people from their own ethnic community. Still others take hard-earned money without even intending to file documents or help in any way. Notario fraud affects immigrant families and communities in my district, as well as throughout the state. It is time to work toward a solution that will protect vulnerable populations from dishonest and illegal activity. House Bill 3525 attempts to take a closer look at the solutions to notario fraud by creating a work group to study the scope of the problem in Oregon. I urge you to support the task force that would be created by the bill. Multiple stakeholders are prepared to join in the discussion representing the Oregon State Bar, immigration attorneys, Oregon Advocacy Commissions, and the Department of Justice, and Oregon Criminal Defense.
Thank you.
Mr. Moreno, please.
Thank you. Dear co-chairs, esteemed committee members, my name is Alberto Moreno, and I'm the chair for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and I want to begin by first wishing your mother a happy birthday. I don't think anything I shall say afterward shall compare to the import of that. So feliz cumpleaños.
How about that? I think she'd be pretty pleased with this bill.
Feliz cumpleaños to your mom. The Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs supports House Bill 3525 and urges its passage. We worked closely with law enforcement agents and lawyers throughout the state to craft a bill that addresses a serious issue in our community, that of unlicensed and non-lawyer immigration consultants, as you've heard from Representative Joe Gallegos. These notarios prey on certain members of the public. Unlicensed immigration consultants are already prohibited under ORS 9.280. But despite that statute, some notarios use coercion and extortion to discourage members of the public from reporting them for their illegal practices. Those threats are serious and have a chilling effect on those victims of notario fraud. House Bill 3525 addresses this problem by providing that using intimidation or fear to prevent a person from reporting violations of ORS 9.280 is a Class A misdemeanor. House Bill 3525 gives law enforcement a tool to investigate, charge, and prosecute egregious violations of Oregon's unlawful practice of law statute. It also encourages victims of those crimes to feel comfortable meeting with law enforcement, a necessary first step. This legislation, as you've heard, is the product of a work group involving the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs, the Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, representatives of the Oregon Department of Justice, the Oregon Chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and the Human Trafficking Unit of Multnomah County Sheriff's Offices. You can hear by that list of names we've been very intentional in bringing this forward. We urge your support and passage of this bill to help our community and the state as a whole. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you. Questions for anybody? All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for bringing this important bill to our attention.
Thank
we very,
very
much appreciate it.
I would share, though, Madam Co-Chair, yep. Representative, your name was sung in praise among 26,000 people on Saturday at the Oregon State University graduation. Please know that.
Really? Jose.
Yes.
Yeah.
You must have a graduate from.
You must, yeah. Thank
yeah,
you so much.
In your office.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3525. And since Senator Gelser is here with us, we're next going to move. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 772. Mr. Turpin.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee, Senate Bill 772 requires video transmissions of executive department and legislative department to be closed captioned for access by hearing impaired persons. This applies to video transmissions created on or after January 1st, 2016. There is a fiscal impact issued for this measure. The Legislative Administration Committee estimates the fiscal impact of this bill to be $432,720 of general fund for the 15-17 biennium. This amount includes one-time cost of purchasing 14 encoders, as well as ongoing costs of hardware and software support agreements, phone lines for each encoder, and contracts for transcription. As far as executive branch agencies, the majority of executive branch agencies have no or very few video transmissions that are distributed to the public. Exceptions to this are Department of Education, Department of Energy, Oregon Education and Investment Board, Higher Education Coordinating Commission, Department of Land Conservation and Development, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and the Oregon State Police. Those following agencies provided projections of costs ranging from $18,000 to $100,000 per biennium.
Thank you so much, Senator. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward and Chair Smith and members of the committee, and happy birthday to your mom. Thank you for scheduling Senate Bill 7. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Corvallis and Albany, Senate District 8. Senate Bill 772 is one of two bills this session to address the needs of deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians. These are individuals that may have been born deaf or hard of hearing, acquired their deafness or hard of hearing status, or many older Oregonians, as we get older, it becomes more difficult to hear what is being said. As you know, if you go to an airport or a restaurant and you look up at a television, there's closed captioning that is running on those televisions. That's because the Americans with Disabilities Act requires that video transmissions also be accessible to the deaf and hard of hearing. Unfortunately, despite our really great public outreach through our website, the ability to watch hearings like this and floor sessions, deaf and hard of hearing and often older Oregonians are not able to access and experience that. There is a further challenge that when deaf and hard of hearing Oregonians come to testify before the state legislature and participate in the public process, it's been very difficult for them to access accommodations such as captioning. It simply makes sense that we too would comply with the spirit of the Americans with Disabilities Act and ensure that all Oregonians have access to our public meetings so that they can know what it is that's going on. If you have looked at captioning, it's actually something that is beneficial to everyone. Imagine, if you will, that you are sitting on the House floor wondering what the heck the Senate is doing over there, and you have to have your computer on mute with the captions on. You will be able to know what's happening. Imagine you are waiting to know when you need to go to your next bill. You have your computer on with the captioning. You will know where it is that you need to go. I have gotten great feedback. I have personally made a commitment to captioning. Every video that I put out from the House floor, any floor speech, I have captioned before I've put it up on YouTube and shared it with constituents. Huge response to that. People have been very, very supportive. And during our campaign as well, I worked with our local leaders to make sure that we had at least one voter forum that was captioned, live captioned. And we have made captioning available upon request for town hall meetings as well. And it was a good reminder to me that all of us, when we do our town halls, do need to be putting an ADA request out there. And if someone requests ASL or captioning, we are required to provide that. But the best response came from older constituents who were able to participate more effectively in the meetings because the captioning helped them move along. It's a common sense bill. I hope you'll move it forward. It certainly fits within any upgrades we might do to the Capitol. It's a investment well worth making.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Senator, I'm very supportive of this. I'm surprised by the fiscal. It seems really high to me. I mean, if you're doing, could you give us a sense of how much it costs you to do what you're doing within code with captioning your videos and stuff like that?
Co-Chair Senator Hayward and Co-Chair Smith, I do all the captioning myself, so I'm not hiring someone to do it.
Okay.
When we have had it for events, it's generally been $150 to $200 for an hour and a half to a two-hour period. I believe the cost, if you look at the fiscal, there's kind of that initial cost of the hardware, but the captioning, quality captioning, actually does require a captioner to go through and make those corrections. So I'll upload my video to YouTube, for instance. It will automatically caption, and those are some pretty funny speeches if you go with YouTube captions.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Other questions for the senator? Senator, thank you so much for bringing this important issue to our attention. Appreciate it very much. And I don't have anybody else signed up. Was anybody else here to testify on 772?
There were two individuals that wanted to be here today and couldn't, and their testimony is in OLIS for you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that. We'll take a look at it. All right. Seeing no further folks, I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 772. And do you want to just go through yours, or do you want to, what do you prefer, Matt? We'll just finish up yours then, okay? So we're going to move now, and I want to thank all the folks who are here for 55 for being patient. We'll just get through this, and then you guys can have the remainder of the time. I'm going to open a hearing on House Bill 3314, Legislative Review of the Implementation of Legislative Policies. That sounds very complicated, Mr. Sherpening.
Co-Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the committee, House Bill 3314 establishes the Joint Committee on Strategic Public Policy Review to undertake review of major public policies in specified subject areas. It sets forth selection process for identifying policies for review and for selecting type of review to be performed. It requires the committee to submit proposed reviews to the Legislative Assembly for approval or rejection, and authorizes the committee to introduce legislation to address findings for review. The fiscal impact is indeterminate at this time. It's believed to have a fiscal to the Legislative Assembly, Legislative Administration Committee, Legislative Council, Legislative Fiscal Office, Legislative Revenue Office, and the Secretary of State.
Thank you. This is our day for wonderful legislators in front of us. Representative Comp, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And for the record, and Mr. Co-Chair, I'm Betty Comp. I serve House District 22. That's North Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn. House Bill 3314 is a bill about developing a process to have us look at legislation more long-term and in a visionary role. We have a growing complexity of the challenges facing Oregon. It's time for us to refine the workings of state government to help Oregon move forward in the future. House Bill 3314 is a visionary bill. When our state recently changed our constitution to have annual sessions, it had a huge impact on our decision-making process. Because where we once had time to complete research and develop in-depth legislation biannually, our opportunity for visionary strategic governance has diminished. A large portion of the balance of the power now resides with the executive branch and agency directors. I feel that now is the time that the legislative body needs to think boldly and strategically about our future. House Bill 3314's intent is to analyze and implement strong legislative statutes. Many of us can relate to the comment that ideas percolate for years, but actions don't move forward. By creating this joint committee, the legislative body can focus on chosen topics, get the research to make the decision, and zero in on comprehensive vision for the future. The joint committee does not intend to supersede the standing policy committees. In fact, the standing policy committee could be the ultimate arbiter of any omnibus or long-term policy legislation once finally presented to a legislative body. What this bill represents is the opportunity to level the balance of power between the executive, judicial, and legislative branch. When our legislative leaders develop a forward-thinking process and strategic planning, the results will bring about a strong transportation plans, best schools in the nation, and strong economic and business success. The list is endless. Most importantly, House Bill 3314 continues the long-standing tradition of Oregon innovation to make sure that we can continue to come up with solutions that our state needs today, tomorrow, and in the future. What this bill does would create a joint committee with the presiding officers as the chairs, and that they would, let's use transportation as a topic. They could choose one topic, say, we're going to really delve into, okay, why didn't the CRC plan work? And why the budget is indeterminate is very easy to explain. Is the fact is we would be needing researchers to do the work. And seriously, right now, from my perspective, we are not... We work hard on our bills each session, but many of us, if we have a contested campaign or race, you're busy working on your campaign. You hardly have time to look at legislation, much less look at big ideas. So the concept is to look at big ideas and whether it's healthcare, our prison reform, we just have those major areas that, and working on this committee has shown that when we ask questions, we asked a question. The question was asked in the full Ways and Means Committee last Friday about a certain issue, and we didn't have a response. And if we have a work group like this, then those questions can be reviewed earlier, or what legislation has been passed, is it moving as projected or not? So I'm open to all kinds of questions, but this bill did pass the Rules Committee unanimously, and I ask for your support or any help that we might need to work on this.
Senator Johnson?
I guess the question that I have, and I apologize, I just scampered down here without a computer, so I don't have the fiscal on this.
It's indeterminate.
Indeterminate, okay.
You good? Okay. I have a question and a statement.
Please.
I think this is a great bill, and I completely agree with you, and I think we do need to be taking a much more overarching view of policy, and I'd be, assuming this makes it out of your side of the building, I'd be honored to co-sponsor it with you. But the question I do have is, how would this dovetail in with the new proposed legislative policy office, which my understanding would take shape in place of committee services after the 2016 session?
Actually, I've spent enormous amount of time with the Speaker's office and the Chief of Staff of the Speaker's office to make sure that these would complement one another.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much, because I think that's important.
So, yes, yeah. We all did.
Yeah. Senator?
Having, now that I've got my head in the game a little bit better, having spent hours sitting in that work group talking about the policy office, one of the big questions, and I don't know how it applies to this particular piece of legislation, but was how do you inoculate a policy office against partisanship? And what acts as the gatekeeper to look at what the big issues are? For some of our colleagues, big issue might be prison reform. For others, using your example, why CRC failed. So in this bill, what are the safeguards against using this office as a partisan political office, and how do you triage what are the big issues of the day that would be subject to review?
Thank you, co-chairs Steiner Hayward and Smith and Senator Johnson. That would be part of the rulemaking that would have to really work on that. But the way the bill is written, it is written so that, like that, the presiding officers are the co-chairs, but that the membership is definitely made up of the leadership of each party, so that they have a voice right from the beginning.
Followed.
Please.
There's one thing about having a voice, and there's another thing about getting rolled by a partisan majority. And I don't care whether it's D or R, but you have automatically embedded in this bill the disproportionality that became the subject of a lot of work of the work group looking at the policy office. And until that can be resolved, even a well-thought-out bill that attempts to do what you are attempting to do, which I support, why go to the expense and the effort if the usurpation of the majority neuters the bipartisan approach that I think you're looking for?
Co-chairs Steiner Hayward and Smith and Senator Johnson, not being part of the working group that you're talking about, I would think it would, well, if I knew yesterday what I know now, I would say, well, we need to put these two things together and make sure that what you're sharing is something that it's what I would call actualization, that it is a reality and that it won't be a partisan rollover.
One more comment.
Sure.
It was a equally balanced group of legislators that sat in on the work group, and I have to tell you, at first I got off to a little bit of a bumpy start with the consultants. But as we went forward, I thought that they were some of the best consultants in helping work through the process of the discussion that I've ever been around. And they delivered a report. The other piece that you might want to avail yourself of, or if they haven't, they're in the process of delivering the report. The other thing that you might want to be aware of is that depending on how this Office of Policy Interpretation, or whatever you wanted to call it, how it got put together, had a breathtaking fiscal. On I think on the cheapest end it was approaching $1 million, and on the Cadillac version it was way up there. And it was who it's staffed by, what kind of credentials, do you want to divide it by issue area, how can you get efficacious use of the policy and analysts if they're not working on policy. But that consultant work might inform refinement of this bill.
Okay. I will look at that and, again, consult with the Speaker's office and see if we need an amendment. Yes, I will confer with them right away.
So Senator Johnson's questions make me wonder whether you would be amenable to a sunset on this to allow us the opportunity to reevaluate in 6 years or something to ensure that her point about people being this being overwhelmed by a partisan majority. One could also make the argument, I didn't quite follow how you were setting it up, but I didn't get a sense from this that it was a requirement that the membership be proportionate to the percentage of different parties in the legislative bodies in different chambers. And so another way to address that, if you were amenable, would be to make it clear that there should be equal representation from both parties, which would also help to avert Senator Johnson's
right.
well-taken point. Senator, I don't know if you think that would be helpful, but both of those things might be helpful in addressing what I think is a legitimate concern on her part.
If the idea of this bill was to open the door to the conversation about ostensibly a nonpartisan policy office that would mirror LFO, LRO, and Ledge Council, then I think that you would need to default back to that consultant report. We spent hours getting around the notion that we didn't go so far as to say proportional, but certainly talked about evenly balanced and what you could do to inoculate against the politicization, I can't even say it.
Polarization?
Thank you. I'm specifically talking about political bias in a policy office. I think we in Oregon have done remarkably well to keep partisanship out of LRO and LFO. I couldn't tell you the politics of most of those guys, any of them. But this, where you're deciding what gets researched, the universe is huge. And how do you decide what's topical? It is the most worrisome piece to me. We're not going to have enough horsepower in one of these offices to do everything that everybody wants. How do you also inoculate against it becoming the purview of certain legislators? You must know in your caucus that there are frequent flyers in the caucus offices that demand an enormous amount of time, a disproportionate amount of time from other members. How do you make sure that this office is managed in such a way that the frequent flyers' call for action doesn't dominate the more timid voices? So it's a wonderful idea. This one is one where clearly the devil is in the details.
Right. Well, what I commit to you is to get a copy of the report if it has been published, and like I say, and again, go back to the Speaker's office and see where we need to, where we can strengthen this.
Representative Kump, could you? I know that I was involved in some of the initial conversations, but not clearly to the extent that Senator Johnson was, about the Legislative Policy Office, which is something I strongly support as well. Do you have? I know that several other states have something similar to the Legislative Policy Office. Do other states have a committee such as the one that you're proposing within this bill?
Co-chair Steiner Hayward, I really don't know the answer to
that. That would probably be a use, if I may just 1 second follow up. That would probably be useful information, and to get a sense of whether it's in place of a legislative policy office or in addition to, and what effect it's had on that any given state's ability to advance a consistent policy arc, if you will. NCSL might be helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All that's in this report. They did a detailed analysis, and they analyzed different structures, what made sense, what exists now. They were informed by NCSL plus other additional research that they did. My argument would be that this bill, until there's a thorough body-wide review of the report from the consultants, may not be ready for prime time, because it doesn't address the single things that were the most problematic when the work group was helped through with the facilitated consultants.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Johnson. Yes, appreciate that.
Further questions for the representative? Seeing none, I didn't have anybody else signed up for this one. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify on House Bill 3314? If not, thank you so much, Representative.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it, and it's been an interesting conversation. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3314, opening a hearing on Senate Bill 55. Mr. Stammer, I know we started this last week, but could you bring us back up to speed again, please? And then, Julie, do we have a list for today?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 55A, as it stands, this bill requires state agencies that request people to voluntarily provide their Social Security number on documents related to monetary obligation or transactions, to include a notice on the document that the information may be used by the state agency for debt collection purposes in accordance with rules adopted by Department of Administrative Services. The bill also requires Department of Administrative Services to establish procedures for the sharing of the Social Security numbers between agencies. It authorizes state agencies to charge a fee related to delinquent and liquidated accounts assigned to the Department of Revenue. It specifies the process for the proposal and acceptance of offers of compromise for settlement of a debt. It requires DAS to adopt policies relating to state agency debt collection and to provide training and technical assistance to state agencies on debt collection processes. And it specifies information to be included in the state agency report that's submitted to LFO. It also requires Department of Administrative Services to charge agencies for their share of the costs. The current version of the bill, the A and Gross version, has a fiscal impact to the Department of Administrative Services for about $206,000 other funds. This is to accommodate 1.0 FTE, a full-time accounts receivable position, and that revenue would be received by charging other state agencies a fee to accomplish the tasks in the bill.
Thanks, and I apologize. I wasn't here for the initial part of this hearing last week since we were on the floor a long time. My understanding is that there are further amendments, but I don't see them in OLIS. What's up with those, Mr. Stearns?
Madam Co-Chair, what happens at a public hearing is the amendments that are being looked at are being forwarded by either agencies or by legislators or being carried by legislators. We put those into the public testimony section, and I believe that because this hearing started last week, those are probably contained in the public testimony from the original date. Is that correct, Joe?
They should be associated with the bill, I think.
Public testimony, they're probably associated only with the hearing date.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Then, Senator Johnson, I'm going to ask a question. I know folks have heard other things already, but since you and I weren't here, do you want to hear a little bit more about these amendments? We could ask Representative Taylor, who's been working on them very hard, or do you feel comfortable with having reviewed them?
Yes. I think it would be
yes.
I think it would be useful for people that are listening to this hearing. This is an incredibly important piece of legislation, and it might be useful to have a synopsis of the amendments. Having said that, Representative Taylor was kind enough to reach out to me and go through the -8, -9, -10, and -11, and I think they're all terrific amendments.
I think I'm going to ask if folks would be kind enough to let me I'm looking at them. Oh, they're just in your testimony? Okay, never mind. I don't know. I'm having trouble here. Representative Taylor, can I just ask you to help us out a little bit here? And
yeah,
for
no
everybody
problem.
Else who's here to testify on this, I'd be grateful if you'd indulge the chair to let her get caught up a little bit here.
I'll leave my computer there. But.
Thank you. I don't see the amendments in here.
Kathleen Taylor, House District 41. So Senate Bill 55, I'll ask Chair Steiner Hayward to say how much, because I know there was a hearing on Thursday, and I, too, unfortunately, was not here. And so I don't know how much we want to repeat what the He did a nice summary of explaining what the main bill does. I can talk about the four amendments. Is that what you'd like me to do?
Yeah, I think so. I think most of us are pretty familiar with the main bill at this point. And so if you could just give us a brief synopsis of the sevens, eights, and nines.
It starts
and
with the eight. 9, 10, and 11.
9, 10, and 11.
Okay,
thank you.
So thank you, Chair Steiner Hayward.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
So the Dash 8 amendment, what this does is it makes it so that all the entities that going outside of the executive branch, so Treasury, Secretary of State's office, et cetera, that they will be reporting the same material at the same time to DAS and to LFO. Then the Dash 9 amendment is actually there are a couple little fixes in here, and what this has to do is it puts back in the training and the technical assistance to the state agencies, and perhaps Matt can correct me if I'm missing something there. And then, am I missing anything in the Dash 9 on that one? I think that's pretty much what that is. And then on the Dash 10, these are, as I understand from the Secretary of State's office, these are the technical fixes. And then Dash 11, what that's about is that we have, I think it's 17 state agencies that have semi-independent status. Mm-hmm. And in the semi-independent status, I believe that they are exempt from having to report certain parts from the Oregon Accounting Manual. There are certain chapters in it that they do not have to report on to the state, and this makes it so that for the liquidated and delinquent debt that they're going to share that information with DAS and LFO, and the reason for that is so that we can have an enterprise-level picture of where all the debt is.
Okay, so just to be clear, looking at the Dash 11, because the rest of it I all got.
Yes.
I'm assuming that any new agency that became semi-independent, for example, I think we're doing a bill this year to allow the medical board to become a semi-independent, that would automatically go under 182.454, which is the statute listed in this?
Chair Steiner here, with my understanding that that would logically, I think that that's what would happen, but I think we'd have to ask LC, but I think so, yes.
Okay, and then the other question about this is I see Oregon Health and Science University in here. Is that the education side of it, or is that the health system side of it? Do you know?
Chair Steiner here, with my understanding, and again, maybe Matt can correct me, I believe it's the entire, I understand it to be the university, the school portion of it. Is that correct?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Taylor, my understanding is the way the amendment is written right now, it's the entire organization.
It's the entire organization, okay.
So if that's the case, then why are we not including the seven schools that are part of Oregon University System, which now fall under essentially a similar category as OHSU?
Well, Chair Steiner Hayward, and again, maybe Matt can help me here, but there is, we do capture some of that information already.
Okay.
Maybe we do, maybe we don't. There was a section of the report that had to do with the OUS universities on their debt, but I don't know if that was just
maybe
the student
debt. Maybe I missed that in part of the.
No, I'll have Matt clarify because
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Taylor, members of the subcommittee, the issue there is the Oregon University System became exempt from reporting in the 2014. Fiscal year, the 2015 fiscal year, right? No, the 2014 fiscal year. And it's so during the last report, they were included in the report, but in the upcoming report that we do for next year's period, they are excluded. And the Legislative Fiscal Office also noticed that the legislation did not include the Oregon University System, but it appears to be simply an oversight, and that could be corrected.
Great.
I would appreciate that being corrected because I don't think, if we're including OHSU, I don't see why we wouldn't include the other universities.
Madam Co-Chair, I agree with you. I perhaps misunderstood something in my conversations with Matt because I thought that we were capturing some of the information. For clarification, Matt, will you explain what that line item is in the report that does include about the OUS? Is that just the potentially the student debt not paid to the schools?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Taylor, no, in the report, we included information from last year's report. We had OUS information. It's just now that the effective date of the legislation that became took them out of our purview.
We need to pull them back in.
Madam Co-Chair, I completely agree. I will have LC do that.
Thank you. Other questions for Representative Taylor?
The only thing is, apropos a conversation I had earlier today, time is of the essence. If there are any fiscal ramifications to getting those amendments drafted, I completely agree with the policy behind the amendment, but I would respectfully ask, in the interest of moving this bill, that we get it done ASAP.
Shouldn't be hard to do, should it, Mr. Stevens?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, just so you know, we do have preliminary fiscal impact statements for each one of the amendments.
But I mean, if we add OUS in, would that significantly
does it change
alter
the fiscal impact?
Do we think
that? I don't know, but we can turn that around.
Cool.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Then I would ask that you go ahead and work on that, if you'd be so kind. Thank you so much, Representative Taylor. Michelle Altman, and I'm guessing that's Catherine Weber, but I can't read your handwriting. Catherine, are you testifying again? Your handwriting's worse than mine, and I'm a doctor, my friend.
She's a lawyer. What can you say?
She hasn't seen mine yet, so you're all right.
Thank the nuns.
Ms. Altman. Chair Steiner Hayward, members of the subcommittee, my name is Rochelle Altman. I'm legislative director in the Secretary of State's office. I'm here to focus my remarks today on the Dash A10 amendments, which I understand you will consider at a future work session. Gary Blackmer, our audits division director, he did testify on the Dash 9 amendments, which we worked with Rep. Taylor to draft, and those would help implement the last of our audit division recommendations. We do have members of our audits division here today. If you would like another overview or additional information about the Dash 9s, but I will make a few remarks on the Dash 10s.
Please.
The primary goal of the Dash 10 amendments is to maintain the constitutional independence of the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer, while at the same time providing those offices with the same new tools that would facilitate debt collection that the underlying bill gives to other state agencies. As background, the Dash 6s that were adopted by the Senate Rules Committee excluded the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer from large portions of the bill in the attempt to maintain the constitutional independence of those offices. And while we certainly appreciate that intent, upon reviewing the A version of the bill, we found that we were carved out very broadly from entire sections of the bill rather than particular subsections. And the effect of that was it prevented our two agencies from receiving some valuable debt collection tools that, as I mentioned, other agencies are receiving under the bill. So we believe that the A10 amendments would provide the Secretary of State and the State Treasurer with the desired debt collection tools and authorities that other agencies are receiving, while at the same time maintaining the constitutional independence of those offices. And then finally, I just want to note that the A10s make a few technical changes that were requested by the Oregon Department of Justice, and those will ensure consistency in the language across ORS Chapter 293. And those are the amendments that would have the bill refer to liquidated and delinquent accounts as opposed to simply delinquent accounts. And so for these reasons, the Secretary of State asks for your support of the A10s at a future work session, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you so much. Questions from Ms. Altman? Terrific. Ms. Weber.
Co-Chair Senator Stainer Haywood, Representative Smith, who obviously is not here, members of the committee, my name is Catherine Weber. I'm the CEO of the Institute for Modern Government, part of the Willamette Graduate School of Business. IMG has reviewed and enthusiastically supports Senate Bill 55A with the proposed Dash 8, Dash 9, Dash 10, and Dash 11 amendments. Modernizing state collections and specifically liquidated and delinquent accounts, now over $3.2 billion, is a massive and complex topic requiring collaborative team efforts with legal, financial, and information technology experts. I'd like to do a really quick summary of the activities that brought us here. Number one, in November 2013, we held a symposium co-sponsored by several legislators, Dash and the Department of Revenue, and a list of who participated and the identified problems is on OLIS, and it's this is what it looks like. I believe it's attachment one. Next, we took the problems and created a to-do list and set up teams to research and implement the items on the list. This is an example of our collaborative team structure, and it identifies private collection agency issues, debit credit cards, and the other primary topics, working with the feds on TOPS, Treasury offset legislation, etc. Most of these teams have been activated, if you haven't, simply due to the timing of the issues. About a year ago, so the next thing, IMG took the problems and determined that probably the most critical first one to be taken care of was the number of huge number of often inconsistent statutes and rules that the state and the feds have. Last summer, Representative Vic Berger hired Eli Justman, a lawyer, to inventory those rules and statutes, research what the feds and other states were doing, and create a list of items that might need legislative action. That list became the initial bill draft request, introduced as an interim Senate Revenue Committee bill, and it's now Senate Bill 55. Eli has continued to work at a legal and as a volunteer over the many different amendments that have come up and the changes that are now in front of you. My fear is that there'll be an assumption that Senate Bill 55 will solve this problem for once and for all. All the problems related to collections and accounts management, accounts receivable management, it will not. It is not a COTS. It's a great step forward, but it is certainly far from a full package solution. IMG plans to continue its modernization of collections projects. Our board is committed to continuing to work on the project, which we believe will be likely to extend a number of years. We'd also like to express thanks to DAS, which and Renee Klein, who has been involved since very early on. And DAS has established their own internal group. We've got some cross membership. And we believe that this collaborative effort has produced a very good first beginning.
Terrific. Questions? Senator Johnson.
Just a comment. No disrespect, but that seemed like kind of a buzzkill bunch of testimony. This is a huge step forward. For some of us that have labored in this vineyard for as long as a decade, and I would put Representative Nathanson up there in the pantheon of heroes, braver people have walked away. This moves the ball down the field an enormous long way, and I hate to see the effort that has brought us to a vote on Senate Bill 55
minimized.
And I understand that as long as $3 billion remains uncollected, we are going to make little baby steps. But some of us are jubilant about this bill, and I just hate the record to reflect that, well, it's a good start, but you still got to drain the ocean.
I was drawing on my experience having been both staff and in the legislature, seeing legislation passed, and nothing ever happens because it sort of disappears into the cosmos or whatever. So that's my own personal...
Ms. Weber, I would just echo what Senator Johnson said. I have not nearly the level of experience or length of experience that she or Representative Nathanson, who've both committed to this, and I'm sure Representative Comp has been involved in the past as well, because it's the kind of thing you do care about a great deal appropriately. But this bill has generated an enormous amount of interest among this legislative a wide range of members among this legislative body. And there is an enormous, I mean, one could make a pretty strong argument that in terms of the economic well-being of the state, this is one of the most important things to pass this session. Because if this does what we think it will do, and we are committed to making it happen, centralizing debt collection, allowing us to do a whole host of things that we've not currently been allowed to do, and including pretty much everybody under the sun who could claim to have a state connection. That's a really big deal. And a lot of us are very, very excited about this bill. So I think the chances of this one getting swept under the rug are pretty darn small.
Wonderful, and I'm sorry I minimized it.
It's okay. We appreciate it. We even those of us with relatively little experience understand how it can be easy for things to fall off the radar, but I don't think this one's fallen anywhere. This is a priority for a lot of us.
Thank you. Further questions
for this panel? I want to personally thank Representative Taylor, who's been working incredibly hard on this bill and doing an enormous amount of work to get these amendments crafted, working with Mr. Stamer, working with the Secretary of State's office, working with pretty much everybody she can think of to make sure, and doing a great job keeping the committee apprised, and for her earlier work with Senator Whitsitt on this issue of debt collection. So both of those have moved us very far along with this conversation this session. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Is there anybody else waiting to testify on any of these bills? Okay. I am closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 55. Is there any other? Representative Hall.
Madam Co-Chair, is the House Bill 3314 still open, or did you close it?
I closed it.
Could you reopen it?
I could indeed. I'd like to reopen the hearing on House Bill 3314.
Madam Co-Chair and members, esteemed colleagues, I did not, I did not review the amendment to my, on House Bill 3314, and it covers some of the issues that Senator Johnson talked about, so I would really recommend that you go through the amendment. It's the dash threes, and yeah. And what I would say is, any suggestion, I will go and get the report that Senator Johnson shared with us, but it does cover some of the areas that you talked about, Senator.
Good. Okay. Great. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to reclose the public hearing on House Bill 3314. Thank you. Appreciate you bringing that to our attention. Mr. Stamer, anything else for us? Ms. Jensen? Mr. Stamer, anything else for us? Ms. Jensen?